Follow Me Up the Barrow.
KCLR.
A series on the rich history, geography, wildlife and recreational opportunities provided by the River Barrow.
Nature is lovely, beautiful, alive and plentiful all the way along the River Barrow.
The Barrow is very much a manipulated river that's been developed by man for industrial purposes originally and now for leisure activities. But it has shaped itself over the years to give a myriad of different habitat types. With different habitat types, then we have different species, and generally the biodiversity on the River Barrow is particularly good. I'll show you the kingfisher nest and some signs of otters.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. This is Lorcan Scott from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. He's introducing me to the wide variety of birds and animals and flowers along the river.
There's a branch down there, and I've often seen the kingfisher just resting there. Actually, early in the spring now, the pair of them were doing courtship right along the mill race here. He was bringing her small fish, so he was below the weir catching small lee beans or minnow, I presume. Small fry from the dace and that's in the river. At the time she was having none of it, now she was bolting any time he brought her anything.
And they've got a nice suit of clothes, haven't they?
They do. They advertise themselves well now. I mean, they can afford to advertise because their flesh is actually foul tasting. So they're not poisonous to a sparrowhawk or any mink or that would eat them. But once having eaten them, they tend to spit them out, and so they tend to get left alone. Yeah.
Who would be their predators then?
Apart from man, I'm afraid now, and disturbing an environment, they don't have many. You know, occasionally a young sparrowhawk or like that a mink or rats will certainly predate the eggs. It tends to be the heavy winters we get that really do for them.
The otter, is he on the barrow?
He certainly is now. There was practically a pet otter here in Gregnamana up to very recently, where he was coming up to people now and inquisitive. And they all mustered, it's the stoat family, the otter family, are very inquisitive animals. And they can come quite close to people, especially now that they're not being persecuted. We can see there's a large rock here now. And generally speaking, the river is quite uniform. There's some riffles, you know, where there's some stones going across. Yeah. You can see the bigger stones are just whitewashed with... That would be the droppings of the dipper in particular.
Okay.
But this one over here has very dark stains. And that's most definitely otter. Now, that's quite old. So, you know, it's been washed over recent enough.
Okay.
But for certainly years, that stone is a marking stone for otters. And where you get a confluence of a stream and a river is quite typical. You know, that might be the boundary marking for otters. And they'll certainly leave their scent around to let other otters come in through. Know that they're in somebody else's territory.
And it just looks like kind of like an oil stain or something.
It does, yeah. There's another bit. Now, they don't always look like that. It might be just a stone, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can check them out then and see what they're feeding on. Mostly they're surviving on fish, and you'll get a lot of fish scales in it.
Mm.
Now, that would be more the dropping than the scent marking.
Okay.
And sometimes you get crayfish remains in them as well, so...
Okay. And that's more a scent marking then?
Yeah, it is. It's more oily and wet.
Yeah.
Yes, it looks quite fresh now.
Lovely sound of the weir.
It's very relaxing, isn't it? Yeah. Let's just have a look at the binoculars here and see if it's...
Yeah.
It could be further down.
The Barrow provides 120 miles worth of nature watching, and under the EU Habitats Directive, it has been designated a special area of conservation. This has had numerous positive knock-on effects.
I mean, there's a huge economic benefit. It would be a very different environment now if we lost some of the species that helped to protect these sites.
Yeah.
Even things like jays and that moving oak through the woodlands, you know, are very important.
Mm.
And everything has its role to play.
Recently, they were directed to designate more sites for kingfishers, but otters, fish and even woodland areas come under their protection too.
One of the habitats that we designate the Barrow for is alluvial woodland. Alluvial is the area where, in winter, when the river bursts its banks and floods out over the land, it provides a huge amount of nutrients.
Okay.
And the species that have to survive in that habitat then you know, exploit those nutrients then to grow themselves. So very quick growing species like the willow will absorb this nutrients, but at the peril of the water always being there.
Now at the moment, I can see a load of ducks all lined up in a row and kind of sitting on the top of the weir, letting the water flow between their toes. They're kind of a common sight, aren't they, on a river?
Yeah, they would be semi-domesticated. Local gun clubs and that would breed the duck. They would be feral as well. Now they would nest around the area. They nest on old walls and in ivy on the bridge there, and that quite a common species, not particularly a species of concern for us at all. But also below the weir then you have the old grey heron fishing there. As the fish try to make it up the weir and lamprey and that, the grey heron will pick them off and feed himself and his family. I've also seen the dipper just a little earlier. They like very fast rivers and fast water. They actually swim under the water to get their food. They've cornered that niche market.
The heron is like a really personable kind of a bird, isn't he? I love the way he kind of stands so still and then, you know, moves real awkwardly then when he actually does move.
He has a lot of character. He's just bobbing under the weir there now. I see him making his way to the head of it there. He was in the trees earlier there. Yeah, quite a large bird now, and certainly if they fly over your head, they have that pterodactyl look about them. But again, very noble and very wise looking now, as we put these personalities to wild animals. But they get a bad rap around fisheries. They will certainly take their share of fish, but they're not a species that would cause anyone any damage. Certainly in the winter, you know, when a lot of the migrant birds have gone, the heron is just staying here and holding fort. And it's everyone has their own heron spot now. There he is there chasing something up. He's on the hunt there for something, all right.
His head just peeping out.
Some lovely sloes here coming out.
Oh yeah!
That's going to be a big year for slow gin drinkers.
they're very lush, aren't they?
They are. They're great now. Yeah, no, they'll be a fine feast for birds and
beautiful.
Blackberries too. Now they're only getting into their own at this time of year.
Yeah, that's true.
It's amazing to have this facility and so few people using it. You know, if this was the Netherlands or somewhere now, we'd be beaten away with sticks.
Will we stay this side or go on the other side?
We'll go the far side and we'll head upstream. There's an area there with Killarney fern growing.
What's Killarney?
Killarney fern. Yeah, it's
Killarney fern was collected by the Victorians in a major way and exported in huge numbers, but is now a very rare and protected species.
So basically here we're in a part of the escarpment of the Barrow River Valley, and it's quite steep-sided in certain points where it's meeting this granite. The river has been pushed away from the escarpment, and cut right into the rock there is one of the sites for the Killarney fern. You have male plants and female plants, mm-hmm. And there's this site here is actually the male. So it provides the spores to fertilise the female. It's considered one of these Lusitanian species, so things like the strawberry tree in Killarney, the Kerry slug in Killarney too, in Kerry. These suite of species are found in Ireland. Sometimes, like in case of the Killarney slug, it isn't found in the UK at all. It's only found in Ireland and then northwest Spain and along the area there. It's called Lusitania. And, you know, one of the ideas was that there may have been a land bridge at some stage going back millennia between Ireland and northwest Spain where species moved across. Then as the Ice Age occurred and sea levels rose and dropped, that land bridge was lost and a few species were left behind. That's a migratory species now. That's a red admiral butterfly. Mm-hmm. Just went by us there. So they breed in the Atlas Mountains in North Africa. They make their way when their numbers get too big to sustain themselves. They move across from France and then to Ireland. Now, they can breed here, but the young don't survive our wet, cold winters. But it's nice to see them now. Yeah. It's really starting to warm up now.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, now we have a banded demoiselle just ahead of us here now. It's one of the damselfly species. So you have dragonflies and damselflies. It's just under the bank. I saw it moving up here.
A banded demoiselle.
Lovely name. They tried to change it now, but I think everyone reverts back to the original name. Now, of course, she's gone into the bank when you want her to reappear. We should get her now, though, again. So there's a beautiful demoiselle and a banded demoiselle, and they're emerald green. Now, dragonflies and damselflies are basically the same. There she is there in the grass.
Oh,
look.
She's gorgeous.
See the bands there on the wings? And
describe her now to me.
So this bottle green, and now this one's a quite small one. They can get quite bigger. About, 2 inches long? And iridescent wings, but there's a very strong band in the iridescence that gives it its name. So damselflies rest with their wings running along their body, and dragonflies tend to rest with their wings out. So that's the only difference. That's lovely.
It was working up to be a lovely morning in Gregnamana that day. The sun was starting to come out, and there was lots of bird activity in the trees.
We had a big year this year now of waxwings. The field fares would be a little bigger now, but they have a tinge of blue in them as well.
Have they?
Yeah. They're a very pretty bird. They can mix up with red wings as well. Oh, that's a jay. So again, the jay is very important. You see there's some oak trees at the back there.
Yeah.
And it looks like another good year for acorns this year. Good harvest for acorns. They'll hide the acorns. They'll bury them in the ground for the winter.
Right.
And they'll forget a certain amount of them, which will realise itself in terms of oak spreading around the landscape.
Great.
So they're particularly important for us here in Ireland.
And the jay, they're an unusual bird as well.
They're one of the corvid species, so they're related to magpies, ravens, jackdaws, rooks, those family. And they're every bit as vicious as magpies, though they're less common, so people don't tend to put the same mass on them. They would have been hunted many years ago for their feathers. They have a lovely blue fringe on each wing. And that was particularly favoured by fly tie fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
They're protected now, so we don't do that now. But they are a lovely bird.
Yeah.
They will eat chicks and eggs, same as magpies and that. But again, you know, nature provides for that, so that we all have a bit.
Though it all looked nice and rosy along the River Barrow that day, with butterflies playing amongst the bushes, sloes and haws ripening in the sun, there lurks underneath the surface the huge threat of invasive species. This gives cause to sleepless nights for some people.
What we fear, particularly any of us working with invasive species, is the next phone call. We're aware that there is a very long list of invasive species just waiting to come in here. Ireland has habitats that are ideally suited to quite a number of these. They can come in, they probably will come in. Some brought purposely, regrettably, because they're attractive or whatever. Most brought inadvertently by anglers or boaters or whatever. So that's something that's worrying us. And as I said, that's why Inland Fisheries Ireland is very strongly focused now on getting the biosecure message out there. You know, people have got to be aware there's lots of nasties around, and you know, we don't want them introduced to our native watercourses.
I've come to Lewistown Loch to have a chat with Joe Caffrey, Senior Research Officer with Inland Fisheries Ireland, who heads up the invasive species section.
Well, I've worked for a long time with fisheries, I won't tell you how long, but a number of decades at this stage, and my prime area of responsibility for many of those years was looking after coarse fish. But progressively, invasive species became a part of what we were dealing with. And within Inland Fisheries Ireland, or as it was at the time, Central Fisheries Board, they needed somebody to devote a little bit more time to invasive species. I was terribly interested in invasive species. I had done work with plants, with insects and with fish, so it would appear I was the right person at the right time. The first one I worked with was a giant hogweed, which we have here on the Barrow. It's a very nasty plant in that it can inflict damage to humans. The sap, if the sap gets on your skin, it can give very, very painful blistering, particularly in the presence of direct sunlight. So that was one that I became involved with at an early stage. And really, it went on from there. And I would say, realistically, that at present, I would spend maybe up to 75% of my time working with invasive species. Such is their prevalence and proliferation in the country at the moment.
Wow.
Though there is really only a very small list of invasive species here in Ireland, the ones we have are particularly nasty.
The River Barrow is such a fantastic fishery. It really is a wonderful navigation and fishery. But regrettably, it has a significant number of the real nasty invasive species that we have in Ireland. One that has come to prominence recently is it's a small invertebrate called the Asian clam. Corbicula fluminea is the Latin name. And up to 2010, it was one that I was aware of that was travelling through Europe. It had gotten into England, but luckily enough, we didn't encounter it here in Ireland. And regrettably, I got a call in April of 2010, and somebody had found a shell that they didn't recognise, a lad called Pascal Sweeney. So he had it identified, and it turned out to be the shell of this highly invasive species called the Asian clam. We thought maybe it might only be an aquarium dump, that somebody had it in an aquarium and dumped it, and perhaps it was only a dead shell. So I brought a team from the West, a team that were working in Loch Corrib, that have a number of divers. So we said we'd dive the site and we'd have a look just to see if we could find any live specimens. So it was about May, early May, we arrived at St. Mullins, absolutely beautiful location, and what we met absolutely staggered us. Not one live clam, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of live clams that no one had encountered before. They were just downstream around the bend from St. Mullins. We did further investigation, we did some quantification, and we reckoned that there was up to 18,000 clams per metre squared of channel. So this is an absolutely phenomenal quantity and a phenomenal biomass.
Okay.
So this was something that we really didn't want to find. In the literature, it's regarded as one of the most widespread and most notorious aquatic invasive species in the world.
Mm.
So regrettably, we had just encountered it. We've actually tried quite a number of methods, and dredging is one. So we actually contacted people from Dunmore East that dredge clam in the marine habitat. They brought up one of their clam harvesters, and we did quite a lot of work in St. Mullins and removed tens of tons of clam. Unfortunately, it made very little difference.
And they obviously reproduce really quickly and easily then. They're just like bacteria, are they?
Unfortunately, they really, typical of most invasive species, they have very efficient reproductive systems. The Asian clam lives for perhaps 4 years, they say 4 to 5 years, but it can start reproducing as young as 3 months.
The young clam has a sticky thread that makes it easy to attach to boats and nets, and fishermen then can unwittingly transport it from place to place. Building up awareness as regards disinfection of nets and boats will help. If not, there could be nothing for them to fish for in the future.
What you have where you have a proliferation of the Asian clam is you have Asian clam and nothing else. It feeds voraciously. It's a filter feeder, a bit like the zebra mussel. It's a filter feeder. And literally, that quantity of clam is capable of filtering out all of the productivity within that water. It clears the plankton and the nutrients within that system. And effectively, it leaves it reasonably sterile. Unfortunately, it's able to survive there. When it cleans the plankton and productivity from the water, it has the facility to feed from the mud. So this is a particularly nasty species.
Joining the Asian clam in threatening the biodiversity in the river itself is another invasive species, a fish called dace. Its introduction to Ireland is a prime example of the lack of awareness about biosecurity.
Dace was brought to Ireland back in about 1880 by an English angler who was fishing for pike using live bait. So he had brought live dace in. At the end of his fishing trip, he was fishing the lower Blackwater. He poured the dace into the water and the dace survived. However, they remained down on the Munster Blackwater for many, many years and many decades, in fact. And it was only through the late 70s, 80s that, unfortunately, anglers who thought they were a very nice fish began to move them to other watercourses. So in the 90s, it was in the early 90s, we got our first record of dace in the Barrow. We were concerned because while this river has a variety of fish species, it doesn't actually need another competitor species. Mm. And typical of invasive species, the dace proliferated. And it has continued to proliferate from the early 90s. So now, probably in this water right here in front of us, we have shoals of dace.
The thing about a lot of these alien species is that they can be quite pretty to look at. Himalayan balsam is a case in point. It's a plant that grows very aggressively along the riverbank.
We've what we call the riparian plant species. These are the bankside species, such as the Japanese knotweed. I mentioned the giant hogweed already, and the Himalayan balsam. Mm. So there's three species that we have on the Barrow. The Japanese knotweed and the Himalayan balsam are species that they're pretty much out of control at the moment. Himalayan balsam has a fairly significant weakness. Most of these invasive species don't have considerable weaknesses. This has. And its weakness is, it's an annual species, so it has all its life cycle in 1 year. Mm-hmm. But it has unbelievably shallow roots, so it's very easily removed from the ground. So in England, they've introduced what they call a balsam bash. And basically what it means is getting lots of people out along the bankside and simply pulling the Himalayan balsam before it flowers and sets seed. The seeds tend to last only for 2 years, they reckon. So if you remove all of the plants prior to them flowering over a 2 year period, theoretically you can eradicate Himalayan balsam. But it's very important to get in before it proliferates. As I said, down where we've got hectare after hectare of it on the lower Barrow, it's beyond pulling. Mm-hmm. But what we have done, again in collaboration with Waterways Ireland here on the Barrow, is we've stopped its upwards progression. So we identified where the uppermost site for Himalayan balsam was, and it happens to be quite close to where we're at now, between Athy and Carlow. And we have removed, through balsam bashing, we have removed all of that Himalayan balsam down to where it's beyond our control. Mm. And what we're going to do is we're going to maintain that. So balsam bashes are becoming a feature of the May time, just before this plant flowers.
And why are you worried about those Himalayan balsams?
Where the Himalayan balsam comes in, or the Japanese knotweed, or indeed the giant hogweed, they will grow very rapidly along these bank sites. They love bank sites like this. They grow very quickly. They're very aggressive. They get a head start on most of the native herbaceous flora. And simply put, they shade them out. So they competitively exclude them. So if this area was to become infested with Japanese knotweed or Himalayan balsam, they will die back in winter, and what you'll be left with is nothing. So you're going to be left with bare banks that are susceptible to erosion during flooding. And from a biodiversity point of view, you've lost a significant amount of variety. As we're looking down the river, you can see a great diversity of vegetation on both bank sides. Mm. That could be laid waste by the invasive species we've just spoken about. And regrettably, the diversity in the water here beside us could likewise be laid waste by some of the invasive species we have presently, but some of the others that are on our doorsteps. There's a number of species in England at present and we're terrified of them getting in. And they will, unfortunately, irreparably damage a magnificent watercourse, which is where we're standing on here.
KCLR.
Follow Me Up the Barrow was produced by Monica Hayes and made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.